You should be warned, the upcoming episode will be full of unfiltered, off-the-cuff discussion. As such, you should consider this your spoiler warning.
Hello, my name is Kyle.
My name is Ryan.
And when our powers combine, we form...
Experience Grind Podcast.
You know, we're not the only podcast with two stupid, woefully inadequate, white, dumb hosts, but we're not the worst. I try to mix it up a little bit there.
Wow. Yeah. I wouldn't say inadequate.
Sure. Okay. Okay. Maybe. Yeah.
What is that? What is
woefully
that?
Woefully unprepared.
Okay.
How about that?
Fair.
There we go. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I'll give
Coming
you
up
that.
Off the cuff. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. I'm doing very good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, man.
Deflected it right back at you. Keep
fine.
Talking.
That's fine. I haven't seen you in like a week. I'd say that's fair.
5 days? 6 days? Did we go Saturday or Friday? I can't remember anything anymore.
I can't either.
Now.
So
it was Friday.
We drove the fuck up to Chicago, dating this episode by like 4 weeks because we release once a week and we did two up there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Getting a peek behind the curtain here, folks. Yeah, it was a. Man, I tell you, that was one of the, it wasn't bad, the drive back. I tell you what is the worst part of that drive. It's the hour two between our, or I'm sorry, hour three between hours two and four.
Okay,
so
yeah.
So like, it's that bit of stretch before I get into Indy.
Yeah.
Because it still feels so far away. And once I get to Indy, then it's like almost a second wind hits you. But man, that fucking second or... Yeah, that third hour is just the worst.
Oh, yeah. We stopped for Denny's on the way back halfway through. And that's when I was like, oh, fuck, I can't do this again. Like, I can't be in this car any longer. Like, I was okay, but then Denny's at 3 and we still got hours to go. I was like, I'm going to fuck this. Oh, God.
Whew. I was actually impressed. You and sound engineer Andrew did a very nice thing. I don't know if it was even conscious or subconscious. But you guys kind of took turns being asleep and staying awake and kind of talking with me. It was very nice. That's a very nice thing to have when you're sleepy, just somebody to talk to.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just pass out on somebody driving. That's not fair to them. Also, they'll drive you to a goddamn Denny's when you want Chinese food. But
we had Denny's again. What's crazy, there were so many like deja vu moments on this trip because I recognized immediately the Mexican restaurant we ate the first time. I recognize the street. And then what's crazy is that previous guest of the show, Casey, and I have actually stopped at that exact same Denny's coming home from Chicago before, which is crazy. We went up there for just a show one time. And same reason, I like to get some fresh hot coffee, a little food in the belly.
Yeah.
Kind of gives you some energy to push through. But anyways, that was a good time, man. I looked forward to it up until we left.
Yeah.
And then... ended up having a good time, so...
Yeah, the drives, you know, it can be tiring, whatever. But getting up there with Dan, seeing his game, playing with him, and just talking about... I don't know, are we saying what we're doing? Whatever.
Yeah.
Talking about stuff.
To recap, it was cool.
It was good.
What Andrew brought up, he's always amazed at the different viewpoints that guy seems to be able to bring out. Like, things that never think about. So, again, thanks, Dan, as always, for having us. Check out those previous two episodes. They're really, really good and really fun. And I imagine we will still go back up there at some point. So,
yeah.
But all that aside, Ryan, we have a completely new episode we're going to talk about today.
Oh, man. What are we even talking about?
Well, I think you know.
Because those people did not look at the title.
Nope.
That is on the top of the page. That's at the probably on the link.
I don't know.
Probably on the name of the video. It's everywhere.
I don't know if you know this, but we're in... Trump America, and so nobody reads anything anymore. It's dumbing down, so everybody listens to stuff. So we could totally
I'd argue America was as dumb as it's ever been.
We are the purveyors of knowledge, so whatever we say is almost God to these people that listen to us.
It's biblical.
Oh yeah,
real quick.
That's the way I go. I roll hard, roll hard. No, so
just
what are we talking about?
Just like the capital G up there.
That's right.
Talking about Biggie.
Talking about the B-I-G. What? Rest in peace, dog.
The B-I-G-O-D. Notorious B-I-G-O-D. All right. No, we are talking about Metal Gear Solid 2 today, which is...
Colon.
Sons of Liberty. Oh, I didn't use the full title. Yeah.
There we go.
So this is a game.
Yeah, it's a game.
That is a follow-up to one of your top five games. Number two,
if I remember correctly? I think it was maybe number three.
Okay.
If I want to say correctly. Yeah, because Shadow was two, Seven was one.
Egregious, but yes, that was your list.
Yes, it was. But yeah, we're going to talk about Metal Gear Solid 2. I think you and I a long time ago agreed that eventually, I mean, we're going to work through this whole series. Yeah,
I think so.
It's very warranted. There's a lot of depth in this episode. Mm-hmm. So here in a bit, we're going to just crack right into it because, goddamn, there's just a lot going on here. I think this game is the first, this really steps up everything compared to like Metal Gear 1. Metal Gear 1 is like tiddlywinks, and this is like that ice game where you break the ice and then everything crashes down. Like it gets fucking avalanche-esque with all the shit this game starts throwing at you.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I just made up that analogy on the fly right here, right now. You're hearing it live, folks. Bill O'Reilly. Okay, we'll do it live.
I gotcha.
Anyways, but before we do that, I do have a question.
I go at Trebek, drunk on camera. Son of a bitch.
I have a question for you, Ryan.
Yes.
It might be a little dumb, but I've tried to somewhat relate it to Metal Gear Solid 2. So in Metal Gear Solid 2, the main antagonist
of
the game...
Could Snake beat Lightsaber? No.
No, absolutely. He couldn't. We agree. All right. Question over. No, it's really kind of dumb. Going to be a little political. Who, in your opinion, is your favorite president from all of history?
Interesting. Taft.
Really?
Because he was so fat, he got stuck in a tub. Like, that's amazing.
Not a bad choice and not a bad reason.
That's incredible. Otherwise, I go Ross Perot.
Ross Perot was never president, though. He was a candidate. I did like Ross Perot, too, as a kid. I don't know why Andrea's laughing. Yeah. Andrew found that incredibly funny. Was it because of the fact that he wasn't actually a president? Okay, there we go.
I was going to catch you.
We're on point. Oh, fuck no.
I thought I was going to slip it by you.
If there's anything I know, it's presidential and American history. Like the time we won Vietnam with the nuclear bomb. Yeah.
That's dropping knowledge bombs on those people.
All right, so... Is it Taft?
Yeah, I go with Taft.
That's really not a bad choice.
Yeah, I mean, that's maybe a jokey answer. Who was it? Was it Teddy Roosevelt who did all the park stuff?
Yeah,
that's
Teddy
Admiral,
Roosevelt.
Like the work for yourself, man.
Teddy
that
Roosevelt
was the president
also
he was.
Got shot and then proceeded to give a speech after he got shot. And I think he beat the guy's ass that shot him before he gave the speech.
This is awesome.
Teddy Roosevelt is one of the truest American badasses of all time. All
right.
The man made the Panama Canal. He went down to South America and just fucking dug halfway through it. That's not a bad choice. If you're going Teddy Roosevelt, fucking A. Excellent.
Right. Okay.
Dude's on Mount Rushmore.
There you go.
Totally gets my thumb up. If I'm going to pick it.
Yeah, what about you?
I think I'm going, easily, hands down, America's president, John Franklin Kennedy. Or is it Fitzgerald? JFK.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Easily JFK. He's the, I don't know. I think there's even still today some conservatives that were like, JFK was an all right dude. Mm-hmm. He did a lot for America. He got us to the fucking moon.
Yeah, he did.
Dude got killed on tape.
He did. Do you think that's why people give him credit, though? Do you think that adds to it? It's like, well, we kind of have to. You say, like, even conservatives say JFK is A-OK.
I don't know, man, because he did a lot, too. Like, he did the space program. There was the whole Bay of Pigs where he kept us out of nuclear war with Russia.
Mm-hmm.
The dude had a lot going for him. He was... a lot of people didn't like him at first because he was Catholic and, people were worried that the Pope was going to be telling JFK what he should do. And he was like, nah, I tell you, I lead for America first, my religion second. He put that first. And that's one of those lines that gets stupidly fucking blurred nowadays. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. He's just a great dude. Also got a lot of ass. So
yeah.
Got to respect that. To a degree, so yeah, JFK, man, easily.
It's a good choice. I've got to say, Kyle, I'm very surprised with how into history you are.
I really love history.
I did not know this about you.
Oh, man.
I did not know.
Huge history buff, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not great at history.
We learn a little bit about each other each day.
Can't remember things very well, unless it's stupid shit. Like movies or games.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, Taft getting stuck. Well, no, that's not stupid. That's hilarious. Like, I'm a dumb juvenile at heart. Like, of course I'm going to laugh at the fat man who gets stuck.
The fat man who gets stuck. That's amazing. Yeah, I've always liked history. And I think maybe that's why certain games also appeal to me. Ones that take history and use it as a basis for groundwork. Metal Gear Solid 2, for example. Metal Gear Solid 3, for example. Both of those into high consideration. So
I think this is going to be a good coloring for your opinion coming up.
Yeah, I think so. So on that note, I think we're going to have a bumper here. The bumper will be the battle music from Metal Gear Solid 2.
Okay.
And we'll talk about that more in depth when we come back for the reason that I chose it. But before that, this bumper is sponsored by our good friends at In Case of Emergency Press, who have sponsored quite a few of these episodes. Thank you, guys. And on that note, we're gonna do this little read for them. So, In Case of Emergency Press is a Bloomington, Indiana print shop founded in 2009. They provide screen-printed goods for bands, record labels, businesses, artists, organizations, and many, many more, with a focus on custom projects and quick turnaround time at fair and affordable prices. From custom t-shirts, hoodies, tank tops, and any other printed apparel to vinyl record jackets, tote bags, koozies, and so much fucking more. They are capable of screen printing your design onto nearly anything. I think last time we discussed testicles, probably, for sure, butts. If you want to do
butts would be easier. They just more surface area.
Yeah, especially if you're as fat as Taft.
That's true.
You could totally get like four logos on that dude's butt cheek.
That's four on one cheek.
On one cheek. Okay. Yeah,
that's probably true.
Taft is fat.
He's fat. He got stuck in a tub.
They can perform design work, too. If you have the idea in your head, but you have no way to transfer it to a physical form, they are able to help you every step of the way. So, if you need anything designed, printed, at a nice, affordable cost, just go to www.incaseofemergencypress.com and get your project started today. Don't wait until it's an actual emergency and tell them Experience Grind sent you. And now here's the bumper. Ta-da! All right, so we are back from that rousing musical track. So let's go ahead and start from that point.
Yeah, music.
So musically, this Metal Gear Solid was not. But from this point on, all of the games in the main franchise were scored by Harry Gregson-Williams.
Yes.
And they all have a different flair to them, which is really cool. I think this one easily has my favorite battle music. What it is, it's that weird saxophone that's kind of like screaming all over the place. Mm. It really kind of puts you on edge musically from the moment it hits. It hits a lot in like the boss battles and when you're discovered. It's a really nice subtle touch because it's grating and attention getting, and it's supposed to be, and it achieves that effect. I think musically, personally, I don't think anybody would disagree that 3 has the best soundtrack.
I might disagree.
Okay. Which one do you think is better?
See, I don't know. I did not care for 3 soundtrack, much like I don't care for 3 in general. I think the Snake Eater theme is dumb and cheesy, but not in a good way.
See, I think it's supposed to be, and that's why I like it.
Oh, no, it is.
Yeah, it's a massive tribute to the 60s spy.
And there will be ties in while we're talking about Metal Gear Solid 2 that will carry over from this point on with kind of the cheesy stuff. So I'll touch on this again later. But just overall, I really did not... I don't remember anything being very rousing, to use your word, in 3 when it came to the music. I don't think the music necessarily fit well with like the moments that were happening. Like there's no epic musical moment in 3. And I can think of moments from 1, 2, and 4. I've not played 5, so I don't know, but I'm imagining.
I can for sure think of 2 and 3, but...
Okay.
It's more personal, I feel.
Well, I know we're not talking about... Well, we'll save it for three.
Well, we can touch on it a bit because we are getting to three. And it's what I do agree with you on, and this is where you and I both deviate from almost all mainstream. Mm-hmm. Two is my favorite Metal Gear. Mm-hmm. That was re-established firmly with this replay through. While almost everybody will unanimously say Metal Gear Solid 3.
It's generally Those people are fucking stupid.
It's generally the fan favorite and the critical favorite, and I wholeheartedly disagree. It's a cool game. It's fun.
Metal Gear Solid 3, you get into like the big open world. They change up the gameplay in a way to make it more accessible, but it's still clunky and jarring, and it doesn't fucking work. So even then, you go 4 because it has a better fucking feel to it.
It's more established to that stuff. Yeah, it's
3
is like the learning block, and But any like if
3 just, is not a fun game to play.
Just to touch on 3.
Maybe arty, but it's not fun.
I really love I love wholeheartedly the Snake Eater theme for its cheesiness.
I know. A lot of people do. I'm in the minority.
That's that one. And again, it plays when you climb that gigantic ladder. And I love that it gets louder as you get closer to the top. That's
like literally my least favorite thing in all of Metal Gear.
That ladder?
And maybe video games in general. But I think it's because I was like frustrated to a fucking point of the arty monotony in that fucking game. Because
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
There's a little bit of... Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to interrupt you. But there's a little bit of in 2, and I think this is where it kind of starts to pivot into something different. And,
we are going to talk about that pivot. Huge.
But in 3, they really ramp up like the self-importance. And like I think in 3, Hideo Kojima goes full artiste. Like that's when he fully realizes I can do whatever the fuck I want and be very self-indulgent. And that ladder is the most self-indulgent fucking thing of all time.
That's a very, very apt description of that. Yeah. I will not disagree with it.
Yeah.
I just think our appreciation of it is complete polar opposites.
Yes. Yeah.
It also comes after an incredibly frustrating boss fight.
Yeah, that's what it was too. Which boss fight was it?
It's the cosmonaut dude.
The fire bug.
Which
guy?
My God, that fire looks so fucking good. Mm-hmm. Best looking fire on
really
any
good
system.
For PS2.
But anyway,
you think still?
It's pretty fucking good looking fire. Go back.
I'll have to go back
when we play through for the when you play that HD one on PS3. Oh my God, dude!
Okay,
it really, really holds up. But anyways,
I'm now surprisingly interested to go into 3.
So we're now pivoting back. That's all the 3 talk. We're going to pivot back to 2. So we established the music is great. And I'm just going to start working through some of my notes, and you can start interspersing as well. So I don't know about you, but my first exposure to this game was when the fact that it was very widely publicized, you could get the demo for this game if you bought Zone of the Enders. So, of course, I bought Zone of the Enders.
I did not.
I did. And so the demo of this game is the tanker level.
Mm-hmm. Is it the entire tanker level? Like the entire mission up until the twist? Or where does it end?
It's not. It ends when you go down to the hold. So when you start...
infiltrating the big army ranks?
Yes.
Okay.
That's pretty much where it ends. But you have pretty much carte blanche through all that section.
Okay. That's really close to the end then.
Yeah, it's
pretty
far.
That's like literally 20 minutes away.
What is really, really, really crazy to me, and I do not know if this could happen in this day and age, is the fact that this game had maybe one of the biggest Reddit, or not even Reddit, just the biggest Kojima switcheroos of all time.
It is. It's a giant troll.
It's a giant troll. It is a giant twist that was not spoiled at all. Yeah. When I bought this game brand new, because I had it pre-ordered, it's one of the very first games I ever pre-ordered. I did not see that twist coming at all, and I don't think anybody did.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you'd see it necessarily in video games anymore.
It is mind-blowing.
But we still get that occasionally in movies, but you would never see it in a video game nowadays.
Because so many leaks happen. Yeah. But even
Fallout 4 was, I guess, the closest thing to that.
I kind of vaguely disagree because of the fact that Metal Gear Solid 5 Phantom Pain also has a pretty big twist.
Oh, does it?
Yes.
Okay.
That was not spoiled up until the release of the game.
Is it that it's unfinished?
No, unfortunately, that is not the big twist.
Well, that's good. I've not played 5 yet, and I really want to. I haven't. I played Ground Zeroes, but I never went to the full game.
Yeah.
So I liked the combat. I just... heard some mixed things about the narrative, and I was like, I can wait, and I just never got around to it. It is
incredibly rushed, and you get to a point where you're like, oh, this is the rushed part. But still, it does have a pretty big twist that was not spoiled. I had no idea about it till I had played the game. But I digress. What's crazy is the fact that there is such a massive twist. And the twist that we are, of course, obviously talking about is the fact that you only play for Snake in like the first hour of this game.
Yeah.
And then, holy shit, you are this brand new character that's introduced. And there was a lot of hate dumped on this decision and this character. And I think it's unjustified.
I do, too. Do you know what Kojima said about all this? I have it written down.
Please do. While you find it, I will just... I want to say and establish on recorded record fact, I like Raiden better than I like Snake.
Oh, that's fucking interesting. We'll get into that.
Yeah. I really like the Raiden character.
So, quote from Kojima. It's hard to get a sense of who Snake is when you're playing as him. So in Metal Gear Solid 2, I want to distance the character from Snake so the player can get a more objective view of him. Thanks to this system, Snake grows in stature. You play as Raiden, who is only a beginner, and then encounter Snake, who suddenly seems more impressive. And then he goes on to like reference like Terminator 2, and this is how the expectations and the twists in Terminator 2 inspired this decision, where Arnold's the bad guy in the first one, and then in the second one, the Terminator's actually saving the Connor family. And he said he wanted to do that, and there's also other references to Terminator 2 in this one game, because I think that was his inspiration for this twist.
I really like the fact that it does sort of attribute and contribute, I guess I should more say, to the Snake as a legendary figure mythos. The fact that you're not playing as him.
Yeah.
It does build him up even more. But he still has a massive part in the game. You're just not playing him.
Yeah.
He has so much dialogue, so much interaction with you as a character, as Raiden. But it's just, it's that cool little look at it from a different perspective angle.
Well, there's a lot of parallels in Metal Gear Solid 2 to Metal Gear Solid 1.
Oh, yeah.
And one of them is Snake comes in kind of as like the cyber ninja character in this game. Like, he shows up and kind of... There's moments where you are combative with Snake, but mostly he's your mentor and he's trying to help you. And it's kind of... And that's the other thing about Metal Gear Solid 2 is it takes the similar tropes of Metal Gear Solid 1... but then does the opposite with them.
I love it, too, dude.
Yeah,
it's so fucking great.
I found today on the internet like a 130-page thesis about Metal Gear Solid 2.
Love it.
And like the ring theory, essentially. Like, it's all parallel but different.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, my God. Somebody wrote 130 pages of this. And then I read like 10. I was like, okay, I get it.
I hope that they got also an A on that thesis.
130 pages, man.
Yeah, that's pretty fucking in-depth. What's crazy, we will not even be probably scratching the surface of 130 pages.
No.
And it's, I mean, we're going to try to condense a lot because this game is fucking massive and it is deep.
Yeah.
We're going to try to hit on a lot of the high notes. And of course, what we always like to do on the show is our personal experiences with this. So.
Yeah, I think that's best. There's tons of literature, literally literature out there on Metal Gear Solid 2.
There's tons of fucking YouTube videos that will break all this down for you and do
Super
so
Bunny
much
Hop
better.
Does a fantastic one. That's
he's always
there,
on point.
He's the best at it. So if you want something more in depth or more analytical that way, it's all there.
Please.
Kyle, going back to Metal Gear Solid 2, you said it completely lived up to your memory of it the first time around. Yeah?
I would say yes. It was a bit harder to play this time, amazingly.
Okay.
It was a bit more of a forcification to get myself through some parts, because I think maybe the gameplay hasn't aged as well as what I'm used to now as a current gamer. But it hits a lot of fucking fantastic notes. It's a wild ride. I love, and this is where he really starts to hit that Kojima note, is that it's his fucking attention to detail on even the smallest things just add flavor and life to these worlds that so many other games just lack. And
like the
come
pin-up.
Off as more robotic. The
pin-ups and the lockers and things like
there's so much you can do in just the tanker level alone. The fact that like the ice cubes melt.
Yes.
There's fucking coding in to have ice cubes melt. Who would even care about that?
Yeah. So this game, all right, this is where I get confused and the Metal Gear starts to blend in. Metal Gear Solid 1, did you have a first-person view? I know you did for the sniper, for sure, and the bazooka.
No, that was not re-implemented until Twin Snakes.
Okay, okay. So then Metal Gear Solid 2 is the first one of the Metal Gears to implement the first person.
Yes.
And as you're saying, like, it's really neat. You're going in, like, this bar area. You can shoot every single glass,
and
every
they all have
piece
physical,
of fruit. Yeah. They all break. Yeah, it's really incredible for an hour of the game. You didn't see that typically in
this
the PS2
in
generation. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's no slowdown. Mm-hmm. You know, it keeps consistent with what it's doing to you. Mm-hmm. It's really a technical marvel in of itself, and the fact that it's a pretty astounding gameplay on top of it just adds to it. And a lot of people like to shit on Kojima, especially now, but I think still a lot of people love the man. And I kind of get this series gets so convoluted.
It does. And this is the start
this
of all
is the
like,
start. That's one of my notes. This is where things
where
go fucking
convoluted.
Wild and get off the rails.
Yep.
And there's a lot that starts to happen, and we're going to touch briefly on those. The attention to detail, as I said. So I'm just going to start listing some of these characters.
Sure.
And things that get a little wild. So the Colonel in this game is the Colonel from the first game.
Yes.
But he's not at all.
No.
He is a complete artificial intelligence program designed to emulate the Colonel. And he also bases his personality on Raiden's internal perception of what the Colonel is via his nanomachines. This is where nanomachines started to become a big thing in the series, too. So I thought that was a really, really wild thing because at first, everything seems normal in this game. Like it feels familiar. I mean, even though you are Raiden, the Colonel is there, and it's sort of a bridge to the first game, what you are more familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not till almost the end of the game that you learn that almost everything you've experienced is a lie and has been an elaborate real-life testing recreation of the first Metal Gear, which again, dude, that's so fucking insane.
It's meta.
Yeah.
It's really so meta because I think because this game already is just like, we're going to switch up. You think you're going to be Snake? Nope, you're not Snake. You're this new guy who is nowhere near as skilled as Snake or whatever. And then on top of that, like he talks about, well, that as you just said, but he also talks about like doing the VR missions of Shadow Moses. And there's all these references and it's a commentary on Raiden trying to be Snake and literally gets emasculated and then get given a sword to be very different. And that's the only time he's actually good.
Almost like a reference to a penis. He gets his masculinity back.
It is. Yeah. So there's so many layers. And,
yeah. Oh, my God.
And speaking of details, just about the Colonel, like I love when he starts to glitch out and you see like the little skeleton mixed with his face and the broken, distorted, computerized text.
And he starts
genuinely creepy.
And he starts referencing things that Raiden would have. He starts referencing the first Metal Gear, a lot of those missions and things that you should do there. There's the all-time classic fission mailed screen, where instead of mission failed, you think that you die, and it says fission mailed, but then the game doesn't actually stop. It even though it cuts to like a quarter camera view up in the it plays with so many things and it's so well done.
Mm-hmm. I'd say just as good as the Psycho Mantis stuff from the first game.
Yeah, and what's crazy is like I love that all this stuff is based in like a real world perception, and then it kind of things make sense in that universe. So like the fact that Fortune also has, so Fortune is the co-leader and now leader of Dead Cell. Dead Cell is the terrorist organization that has taken over the Big Shell, which Raiden is sent in to pretty much take them out and rescue the current president. So she leads Dead Cell and she has this mystical thing about her where she's untouchable by bullets, grenades. Everything just seems to almost bounce off of her.
Mm-hmm.
We find out later that it's actually part of a Patriot technology. It's an electromagnetic field around her. But when that field is still taken away, she still has latent telekinesis powers because she still saves Snake and Raiden later. And I just like
even that, like, she does have that ability, but it was probably suppressed because of the fact that she subconsciously relied on this nanomachine technology. But I like that telekinesis and psychoanalysis stuff has a purpose in this universe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've already had, as mentioned, Psycho Mantis, so of course it's believable and makes sense for the story. Speaking of Fortune, I hate her music a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
A whole lot. And I think this is... I agree with everything you just said. Absolutely agree. It makes sense for the universe. That said, it gets a little hokey at times, and maybe this is the music, maybe this is the way she talks about her powers or whatever, but it just didn't really work for me in the way that, like, a Psycho Mantis did.
Sure.
And even though it makes complete sense, but...
She's very depressed about it all, because she assumes that the reason she has these abilities also causes everyone around her she cares about to die. So it gets real melodramatic, and it becomes a little ham-fisted. I get what you're saying there, so... I think Fortune is probably maybe my second least favorite character in this game. And I want you to guess.
Is it Fat Man?
It is Fat Man.
All right, so I'm just going to go ahead and say it.
Fat Man is the worst.
I don't like any of the villains in 2. I don't like Vamp. I don't like Vamp. Fat Man. I don't like Fortune. I don't like Solidus because he's like only Solidus there for like 30 minutes at the end.
So here's the thing, and we'll come back to this. I think I'm hopefully going to change your opinion on Solidus. Much like I did in Spring Breakers.
You might.
I'm hoping for that. But anyways, totally, I hate Fat Man.
Fat Man's the worst.
He's the worst. He's incredibly lame, incredibly stupid, incredibly campy. Nothing about him is cool or redeeming or even interesting.
Just the fucking name Fat Man. Yeah. It's this kind of shit that Kojima does. And talking about shit, like the guy who's literally shitting all throughout 4. Like,
Johnny
there's
Sasaki?
These dumb, juvenile, stupid things in his games. Fat Man is one of those. And I can't remember there was a moment in Metal Gear Solid 1 that was remotely dumb or juvenile. Otacon pees himself, but it's like out of fear.
Yeah.
So like that's not like jokey.
Johnny Sasaki, who also shits his pants, but that's in every Metal Gear. It's almost it's almost like a wink and a nod. Like, oh, here he is shitting himself, even though he bangs Meryl.
Can't wait to talk about 4. I think again, that's Kojima just saying fuck you, fans.
A bit maybe, but we'll get into that when we get to 4. I feel.
But Fat Man's the worst. Yes. I was reading that he was originally inspired because again the parallel but different. Like he most resembles Vulcan in like his big bulky size, but instead of being strong and muscular, he's big and fat and blobby. Instead of being like Vulcan was naked in the cold. Like, he's big, covered. Fat, and then covered with, like, a big, big, heavy jacket. If you look at the layout, it's, like, Vulcan Raven is in, like, a big area with crates.
Totally.
Fat Man's in big areas with crates. And, like, there's a lot of cold theme in Vulcan Ravens, and you have to use cold to defrost the bombs.
Sure.
And this is...
I'm seeing it now,
apparently, there's a one-in-one for every villain in the game with Metal Gear Solid 1 as well. But that's the explanation for Fat Man. That said, Vulcan Raven also dies leaning up against something, giving you help. Fat Man dies leaning up against something, and he insults you, and you have to search his dead body.
We have to pull it away, and then he's hiding the last bomb underneath him.
Yeah. But,
Let's get in. Again, this is our
personal... He's a fat man on roller skates rolling around with bombs.
It's so fucking stupid.
It's almost like a call it to like Bomberman or something. It's
almost
so dumb.
I don't know. I would like to focus the least amount on Fat Man. And if we can just move on from him and just say he's stupid, I'm fine with it.
I don't know. I think the worst needs to be talked about. But we'll continue. All right, we'll continue.
I want to get more
into
that.
There's a lot more to talk about.
To your experiences and why you don't like Vamp. Because Vamp is generally regarded as a pretty great character, especially as the series continues. Because of his antagonistic... he's almost the opposite to Raiden.
Yes.
As the series goes on, especially.
Okay.
He continues to be a thorn in Raiden's side, and I really like that aspect of him. So...
Okay.
I would like to... let's talk about Vamp a little bit.
All right. So I think the encounters with Vamp are very fun, engaging, and clever. I really liked the duel with the open water area on the catwalks, and you have to shoot him in the head. I think he's a really cool boss to fight. I find his character not very interesting, and I think this takes the fortune thing, like where it could be like psychic powers or nanobots or whatever. This just takes it too far. I've never really been on board with essentially a vampire as a main character. But I'm also not really on board with Raiden post this game either. I think...
Wow. Okay, so this is going to be a big contention.
I love Raiden more after this game. See, I don't. I really like Raiden in this game, and that he keeps getting brought back. I don't know. But I have not played Revengeance, and I really want to because it's platinum.
We're going to this show, by the way.
I'd be very happy to play that. It looks a lot of fun. Looks like a lot of fun.
What I love about Raiden is the fact that he... And we'll get into it again, talking about the ending. He becomes so much a part of what he doesn't want to be, but he tries to do it for the benefit so that others don't have to. It's a very self-sacrificing character. I really appreciate that about the Raiden. What I like, and what I get, here's my thing I don't like about Vamp, is that, especially in this game, it's not so bad in the others. In this game, he's very, very hammy. And he's almost like mustache curlingly evil villain style.
Vamp?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I was like, I wrote notes on Vamp because I really was offended by him. But he was apparently based off of a flamenco dancer originally and even had like that little, the Hispanic samba beat.
Okay.
But I guess Kojima decided against that, but to keep everything else about him intact.
There were also two other characters in Dead Cell that got cut during development, and they're still in the Dead Cell like lineup, but in game universe, they died 2 years before Big Shell. Mm-hmm. And one of those characters kind of got pushed more into Vamps. He absorbed those, and he was the Mystic, so that's why Vamp has... the ability to sort of walk on water and kind of walk up walls.
Yeah, it's still quite a big leap forward in supernatural stuff. And that's fine, but I just don't even think like his character is particularly interesting visually either. He's maybe the least interesting design character aside from Fat Man.
He's a long-haired white dude.
With the shirt off. And Metal Gear he's loves also, people with the shirt off.
If not fully homosexual, he's bisexual.
Yeah, I remembered something about that, but I didn't want to say it.
He actually was a lover of Fortune's dad, who is the guy giving the speech in the tanker level.
Did you know this? Yeah, I think I did.
Yeah, mm-hmm. His name is Dolph.
I didn't know they were lovers.
They were lovers.
No,
yep.
See, I didn't know
And that's
that.
Why Vamp and Fortune, that's why Vamp feels this connection with Fortune. Mm-hmm. Although, again, one of the cut things in development... The reason he is a vampire, originally Fortune was going to have like sort of a blood disease, and Vamp, his nanomachines allowed him to suck it out of her periodically to cure her of that. But that sort of got pushed away, but he kept the vamp mythos and vampire sort of things about him. Again, you know, it's one of those things that happens as games go on.
Yeah.
So I think for the most part why you don't like Vamp. And again, in this game especially, he's bland enough, but pushed forward enough to where it's kind of And that's why he's kind of cooler in the later
games.
They
give him a huge spotlight in this game, but don't have the material or character for him yet.
But like in Metal Gear 4, he's more reserved to the antagonist, to Raiden, so he's not, he's not as far forward. He shows up, and it's really cool stuff what he does. But it's all centered around Raiden. And Raiden, you're playing Snake again, so Raiden and Vamp have kind of their own thing that's happening.
In the background.
But it doesn't take up 80% of the game.
I'll admit, like, the Raiden and Vamp scenes in Metal Gear Solid 4 are pretty cool and visually interesting.
Yes.
But the characters still fell flat for me in 4, too.
I also always really liked that he was voiced by Phil Lamarr. Which is crazy to me.
I never knew this until this game. Really? Or until I replayed Metal Gear Solid 2.
Okay, I knew it back in the day. I was like, Phil Lamarr, that name looks familiar. And in the early days of the internet, I looked it up.
I didn't
realize he's that one dude from Mad TV. But he does a lot of voice work now.
Yeah.
He's got a big part on like Family Guy. Yeah. And
He's the voice of either Green Lantern or Martian Manhunter in all the Justice Leagues, too.
Really? I did not know that.
He's one of them. I don't remember which one.
I don't want to get into Solidus yet.
All right.
Let's talk about Snake a little bit. Just regular, solid Snake.
What's his name in this game?
His name is Iroquois Plissken, which further takes
Snake
the...
Plissken.
It's Russell Fest. Yeah. There you go, Dave. It's Kurt Russell from Escape from New York, Escape from L.A., who is Snake Plissken. So originally, you know, he's obviously inspired by this character, so yes. He gets the name Snake. And so Kojima gives it another wink and gives him the last name Plissken as his fake name in this game.
All right. I've got something to say about this.
Go ahead.
He already gave a wink at Snake, and now he's giving another wink with Plissken. It's too many winks. If this is supposed to be fucking some kind of surprise.
Also the eye patches.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. And that's fine. That's fine. You can just make your hero that. But like, if we're supposed to have this reveal later on, you're kind of just ruining it for the fans because it's like the most obvious fucking like, yep, that's Snake. There's no way that's not Snake, which I guess
to a degree,
is that the point? I don't know. But Iroquois is the dumbest fucking name you could pick.
Yeah.
It's that, like calling me Massachusetts Jones. Like, why would I fucking pick that?
I would choose Raleigh Demarest.
Something. But it's
because you're from North Carolina, see?
I get it.
Yeah, there we go.
But it's kind of dumb. It's just kind of dumb. And then going back to Vamp, his name's fucking Vamp. It's so fucking obvious and
on the nose.
And Fat Man, this game sucks with its villains. I do not.
Dead Cell is not nearly as cool as the original Foxhound.
No.
Or the villains from Metal Gear Solid 3. I cannot think of their fucking name. So shoot me in
from
the face.
From 3? Yeah, I don't know. 3 is the least interesting to me. I can't remember.
I think the villains are the coolest outside of the fear.
There's the fear.
The end, the sorrow, and the boss.
Yeah.
And there's one more.
All of those are so much more fucking interesting than any of the other villains in this game. Besides, I know you want to argue Solidus, and maybe you'll talk me into it, but I'll take the weakest villain from 3, and they're better than any of the villains in this game.
Let's divert, pivot, and then we'll come back. Metal Gear, which is cooler, Ray or Rex? So Ray is the more sleek amphibious design.
Yeah, yeah.
Ray is the more
bipedal. Ray's from 2, Rex is from 1.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ray might be better visually, and it's kind of cool the fights you have.
Ray becomes more of the standard as the series goes on. I do know that because spoiler, you fight some Rays in Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Uh-huh. Makes sense in the universe because so at the end of this game, and they kind of talk about it in 4, the Ray blueprints are sold on the black market.
Sure.
So like a lot of corporations and paramilitary groups and rebel groups, and they all buy the blueprints for Metal Gear Ray. And so he kind of becomes the standard. But me personally, I like Rex because it's what I was established with. Mm-hmm. I think he's got more of a dinosaur aspect to him.
Yeah, cool. He does.
I mean, he is named Rex after all. So
I just want to go ahead and clarify. I don't really have a strong preference one way or the other.
Sure. I think
they're so similar. It's just like
Ray
I don't know.
Rex is big, bulky, intimidating. Ray is sleek, cool, and fast.
Yeah.
And Ray also has that laser beam that. It's really cool when he fires it because it almost looks like what are the things from the Sentinels? It kind of like jumps around a little bit as he shoots it because it's so powerful. Really nice. Again, that fucking Kojima attention to detail.
Yes. Turn. Pivot. We'll get back to it.
Let's go.
Speaking of Kojima detail, this just occurred to me.
Yeah.
So maybe I might be out-argued very quickly because this is a dumb off the top of my head thought. There's a lot of attention to detail. And this game looks still really good. It has like a clean, sleek style, like Mirror's Edge, that I think still holds up. It still looks really... I played this on the Xbox. No remastered version, nothing.
Oh, the original.
Just subsistence,
I played
the
HD remaster.
And it looks so good. That said, I don't think there's a lot of visual variety on the insides of the tankers.
No, because
and
it
that's
all
disappointing.
Takes, yeah,
that's
I totally
very
agree. It all looks the same because it takes place primarily on a giant oil tanker.
So there's a lot of attention to detail, but it's like maybe if you didn't stop and put the time to breaking every single glass or make it, you could like have an ice level or something inside of a container or something. Like it
Totally not.
By the end,
argue.
It kind of felt samey.
Also, having been on oil rigs and oil platforms, it's pretty accurate to that degree.
Oh, I'm sure it is, but yeah. I don't play a video game to have an accurate oil simulation.
Oh, for sure.
Oil rigs.
For sure. Again,
you want to go back to characters or?
Well, I mean, unless you got something here.
Oh, no.
We got, you know, the Otacon.
My job is to just interrupt you and derail us every time you say anything.
We got Otacon, of course.
Yeah.
I like that he comes back. Mm-hmm. We get some really weird character development with Otacon that I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know where it's going and what the overall purpose is, because it doesn't really play a part after this game.
No. Except because isn't the daughter called Emma? Mm-hmm. Like, that's really the only thing that carries forward, is he obviously named the girl from 4 Emma after his sister, right?
No, the girl is named Sunny.
Is it Sunny?
Yeah.
Yeah, then there's no reason we get this fucking backstory at all.
Olga Gurlukovich's daughter.
Who? I knew she was Olga's daughter. I forgot the name.
Which is weird. It's really cool. I like that aspect. And again, we're going to get into
it. All I remember,
it's
her baking fucking eggs.
Once we start getting really deep into Solidus and all of that, we're going to get into Sunny and Olga and all of that.
So going back to Otacon's backstory, I think you'll probably have to tell me, because I have notes here, but I don't think they're very accurate. I thought they were lovers. You say they are sisters, Otacon and this Emma.
Well, he's brother and sister. They're siblings. Otacon is the older, and I believe, again, I'm almost positive they are half brother and sister, but they could just be step. But
they
either
could
way,
be lovers, because
they are not lovers.
He speaks about her in a way.
I see it
that
as
he was once inside of her.
He's very protective of Emma because of the fact that Otacon pretty much broke up and destroyed the family that they had. Because he became a lover with Emma's mother while...
He was a mother lover.
while she was married to Otacon's dad.
Yes.
They had an affair, and then it broke up the family.
And then the father died, right?
Something along those lines. And then the whole family got split up, and Emma sort of hates Otacon, but she also loves and emulates him, so she also became a scientist.
Sure.
And tried to follow in his footsteps to impress him. And it becomes almost this weird brother, sister, father, daughter sort of relationship.
All right, hold on.
Did I turn something on to
you?
You
did.
Or?
I got to write it down before I lose this train of thought.
Okay. I love it.
All right. So I was just ready to say, like, I fucking hate this subplot. It's melodramatic, cheesy, and just doesn't fit in the game. But it does now.
It totally does.
God damn it, it does now. You're right. Because I didn't piece it together, but what you said about following in the footsteps, it's the same theme as
exactly
Raiden and Snake. God damn it.
And he goes in and rescues her, and she's very weak and scared. And
literally have in my notes, the theme of Otacon's story doesn't relate to the other themes in the game, unlike the first one. And now it does.
It
You're
does,
right.
buddy.
I didn't fucking piece that together. That's very good.
But unlike Otacon, spoiler alert, here we go, Emma dies in this game. And it's a very emotional point for Otacon. And I think it maybe brings home this mission that Otacon has taken on with Snake. So this game takes place 2 years after Metal Gear Solid. Mm-hmm. And in that time, Otacon and Snake have sort of formed this clandestine, almost guerrilla operation to stop Metal Gear's and nuclear war as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that?
Yes.
During this whole time, Otacon has been somewhat detached. Snake, of course, has no family. And Otacon, up until this point we've led, has been kind of a rogue agent too. He has no family, no relation. And this game puts his skin in the game. It gives him something to care about, to be concerned about. And then the last vestige of his family life is ripped away from him. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, that's where Sunny comes in Metal Gear Solid 4. I think she replaces the role of Emma for Otacon. It gives him a younger protege, an almost little sister for him to inspire and try to build up and make a better person, to hopefully make a better world than what he has made from it. Because Originally, he had contributed to a lot of the problems that are in this world. He was a designer of Metal Gear Rex, and he's one of the main scientists leading this operation, and he feels a lot of guilt and negativity towards that. And so a lot of his work post that is trying to negate that effect and right the wrong that he initiated in the world, similar to his father, who we will talk about more when you play Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain.
Okay.
So
interesting.
That's my whole big speech on that.
And I'd like you to take over
for a little bit.
No, that was very insightful. I quite enjoyed that. That said, we've kind of talked about kind of the graphics, the gameplay, some of the characters. I think more important than the story, because I think the plot's kind of a jumbled mess in this game.
Sure.
I think it's much more streamlined and focused in the first one. The plot is not as important as the characters or the mechanics of how the narrative works, I guess, more so. It's, I don't know. What I'm going to get into is more summary, like wrapping up and summation. So I don't want to get there yet.
Okay,
so we'll put a pin in it.
Sure, let me interject a bit.
You want to talk about Solidus?
Or? I would, but before I do, let me just say, call back to an earlier episode, maybe just one episode before this. I think Metal Gear Solid 2, very similar to Memento.
That's what I was going to use for my summation.
Is
one
that you learn more the second, the third, the fourth. You're like, you start seeing those things that are peppered in.
Yeah.
They make a little more sense why things are happening that way.
Yeah, I think so. I would just tweak that or put a little asterisk next to it and just say I also think it is a much, much, much more smarter game than it is enjoyable.
Sure.
I think it is a brilliant, brilliant follow-up. The way Kojima messes with expectations and, like I said, that narrative that just mirrors and yet distinguishes itself from the first one, it's all very smart. But we still do get, like, Fat Man, and we still get, like, these things that aren't quite good. And the gameplay, I think, is a step backwards from the first one. I think the first one felt better because it was mostly in third person, and introducing the first person, I think, is clunky, especially the corner dodging stuff.
Yeah. Again,
so I think it is kind of, like I said, a setback, but it is a brilliant game.
I would have argued with you a lot harder had I not also replayed this game for this episode.
Yeah.
But I totally agree with nearly everything you just said there. So
yeah, it's not
bad.
I'm not trying to make it sound like it's bad.
Yes.
But
it's still a very well-designed game. But there are a lot of frustrating elements which are more streamlined. Now, maybe that's because Metal Gear Solid 2 tried to jump forward a lot quicker than most of the games did. Mm-hmm. Some of the things stuck, some of the things did not.
Yeah, this feels like a third or fourth game. Like, this game feels like it probably should have happened later.
It's such a massive step from Metal Gear Solid 1. But, so we're going to get into Solidus. And we're going to get into it right now.
And this will probably be the spoiler stuff.
Actually, I'm going to take a break because I got to pee. All right, so I'm ready, I feel, to get into what I feel is the game and the series' most tragic character, Solidus Snake.
Okay, please explain why.
So Solidus Snake is also the 43rd president of the United States, George Sears.
Mm-hmm.
But I think out of everybody, he has the best intentions, and he gets the rawest deal. So I'm going to break this down a little bit.
Please do.
So Solidus Snake.
I'm letting you take the lead, so go ahead.
Solidus Snake, while villainous and underhanded in his motives, and definitely puts the lives of a lot of innocent people at the front and in the crosshairs of his overall goal, his overall goal is very pure in the fact that what he wants and the thing that he loves most is America. And the one thing that he wants is to free the American people from the control of the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I was infected with nanomachines, the Lale Lulelo.
I hate that.
I like name. That aspect. Well, it's cool because they can't control the fact that they say the Lale Lulelo. It's a nanomachine like thing that prevents them from saying it. It's a cool touch, and I like that it's got use in the universe because you can tell who is infected with the different types of nano machines, depending on the fact if they can say Patriots like or Lale Lule.
Could have come up with any other phrase for them to say.
I think it's also a fucking dumb phrase to, like, if you hear somebody say that, you're going to think they're fucking crazy. Like, what are you talking about? So I think
scenes of like grand importance and like serious talk, and they're like the la la lu la lo, the la la lu la lo, and it just sounds so fucking stupid. It's eye rolling in the way that unobtainium is eye rolling to me.
Fair enough. Okay, I get you there.
The program itself in the context is fine. Just I really hate the name.
But coming back to Solidus, so again, much like totally. Similar, and this is pretty heavy, I feel, for even somebody of Japanese descent like Hideo Kojima to even touch on. Similar to the idea of the atomic bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, it's the idea of the sacrifice of a few for the benefit of the many. Solidus has this very same mindset. He knows some people are going to die, even innocent people, but the end goal is going to be the... for real freedom of the American people from the grasp of this clandestine organization known as the Patriots that are attempting to, in a George Orwell 1984 aspect, control every aspect of their life. And the final key to this is the nanomachines that are within Raiden's brain. And this is what eventually brings the two of them to this conflict on top of the Federal Reserve, I believe is the building they fight on, is the fact that he needs the information in those nanomachines to discover the identity of the Patriots, which actually he didn't need at all because Snake and Otacon discovered if they just take the information from the worm virus that is uploaded to the GW AI from the Arsenal gear. This is so convoluted. Are you staying on page with me here?
I'm following you. Okay. I wonder if our listeners are.
Good luck if you are. If you are, congratulations.
This goes to my point of brilliant, but makes it hard to engage with it.
So, he wants this information so he can take out the Patriots and stop their influence on America as a whole. He wants to give the American people what they've always been promised from the start, which is freedom. Freedom to do what you want, which the Patriots do not give. They control everything that even the most minute, you know, construction worker attributes to this overall goal of the Patriot society. So, and I think he gets the raw end of the deal because, spoiler alert, he dies at the end, but he doesn't die. He goes brain dead, and then this is going to be spoilers for when we get into Metal Gear Solid 4. Solidus's head and torso are actually held onto and used as a decoy of the original Big Boss. So that is a major plot point of 4.
God damn, I don't remember that at all.
So because of the fact that Solidus is the third of the spawn attributed to the L'Enfance Terrible, which were Solid Snake, Liquid Snake, and Solid Snake,
who we all know is French for the bad boys.
I thought it was just the terrible infants.
What you gonna do?
So they were all three supposed to be clones of Big Boss.
Yeah.
Solid Snake was the imperfect clone. Liquid Snake got the better genes of the two. And then Solidus was the actual perfect clone. He is literally Big Boss reborn in the flesh. So that's why I kind of feel he gets, his intentions are the best. He just wants what's best for everybody, even though he understands that some innocent people will have to sacrifice as well as others. But his ultimate goal, I feel, is good because he wants to provide the freedom that the American public feels that they have anyways. But his I don't want to say reward, his punishment is the worst because he's brain dead. He's not allowed to die. They keep this dude alive for fucking ever. And actually, Ava from Metal Gear Solid 3, who is known as Big Mother, she's the one that she keeps his torso around because of the fact that he is a perfect clone of Big Boss. She knows eventually people are going to come looking for him, so she keeps him alive and uses him as a decoy for Big Boss. And it's just... He's not allowed to die. He's not given a release. He has merely just become a pawn in this global anachronistic game for power. And it's completely detrimental to the good intentions, no matter how misguided he has. He becomes just another playing piece in this overall saga. I think that's a great analogy, and it's a little sad for the guy. I actually feel for Solidus Snake.
It is, and you put it very eloquently. I think with the distance between my replay of this game and the recording of this podcast, I think some of that was lost in the memories. But as you talk about now, I am 100% willing to roll back and say, yes, all of this isn't that bad.
No.
I think what's disappointing mostly is that he really only comes about in like the final last little bit of this game.
Yeah.
His influence is not felt like Liquid's, who was on and off throughout, like the whole Miller twist being Liquid, and then
was cool.
He was there the entire time, and then he kept popping up. I thought made him just no, it's you're fine. It just it made him more interesting and felt like a bigger threat as opposed to. I don't know, that's not fair to say because he's just as big of a threat, but just diminished his importance or stature as a big bad villain.
Sure, I get you.
It's
there.
So short.
I think a lot of that too. A lot of this game was drastically changed at the 11th hour.
I heard. Yeah.
Due in part to the terrorist attacks of September 11th. Originally, this game was supposed to have a big dramatic, epilogue. There was supposed to be Arsenal gear crashing into the New York City financial district. All of this crazy, crazy shit that had to be cut and sort of almost re-edited to accommodate the fact that just, 6 months before, the biggest terrorist attack on American soil happened.
Yeah.
It kind of guts the impact to a degree. Amazingly, I mean, kudos to the team for still having the wherewithal to have the impact that this game eventually still has.
Yeah, I think even though it's been edited, I didn't really notice it the first time I played. Like, it didn't feel like a game that was edited. It didn't feel like how I've heard Metal Gear 5 as described as.
Yeah,
it feels like two-thirds
totally
of a game and it's just
cut. Yeah.
It doesn't feel like Final Fantasy 15 did for me, where it's like, there's content missing. Why is their story gone? This felt whole and cohesive.
I like that he also used Dead Cell as a giant diversional tactic. So the Dead Cell is basically the fox hunt of the first game. But their entire role in this game, Solidus Snake had intended and even set things up behind the scenes to eventually give them control of Arsenal gear in the hopes of having the Patriots focus on them, so that he could therefore focus on his hunt of the Patriots and take them out, and again, to give control to the American people. He'd set up this rogue agency and giving them an enormously powerful weapon in hopes of drawing out the Patriots. And of course, didn't work because this game is so full of twists and turns. It turns out that Ocelot is working for the Patriots this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he's also working for Liquid Snake, and he is Liquid Snake, which is a bit, it's really dumb. I'm just going to say it.
And he's possessed by his clone hand or
something. So Ocelot loses his hand in Metal Gear Solid, and in between Solid and Metal Gear Solid 2, he has Liquid's hand grafted into his place, but that also comes with having the ghost of Liquid fill up his consciousness, and they fight for control of the body of Ocelot. It's really, really, really weird and pretty fucking dumb. Here's the thing with Metal Gear Solid 2. It is the problem with all games that are part of a trilogy or an overarching story. It doesn't really have an ending. It's very, very vague and very open. It's obviously setting up things that are going to happen in the future.
I think I disagree with that. I would say that's like people who talk about Marvel movies as just constantly setting up the new ones, but it's like, it's still a self-contained story. Like, you watch Ant-Man and it finishes. Like, sure, there's setups for the future, but it finishes. Metal Gear Solid's the same way. Like, every story finishes. Like, one, there is a beginning and into the arc. Two, the same. Three, I don't even like three, but even three ends and, like, has a contained arc. I think four is maybe the only one that gets a little unwieldy, but that's because it's taking in everything from the Metal Gears, but it still has a definitive end. So I don't know if that's true. I don't know if I don't think it's that ambiguous. I think it's pretty resolute.
So we've come to this point.
Yes.
We've come pretty much to the ending of Metal Gear Solid 2. I'm ready to talk about it. Do you have anything else you would like to interject before we get here?
No, that's okay. I think we've covered most everything.
Okay. So again, you know, I talked about my interpretation of it, how it kind of feels a little open-ended, but I will say, out of every Metal Gear I've played, this game easily has the most hopeful and inspiring ending of the series.
Yeah.
And they could have ended here, and I don't think anybody would have complained.
No, I don't know if maybe Kojima even thought he was going to get a game past this one.
Sure.
I
think after this one, it started the whole the in joke of Kojima saying, "This is my last Metal Gear."
Yeah.
And that was five fucking Metal Gears ago. So, but yeah. So it ends on a very hopeful message, but it also has a lot to do with reality and memory and our interpretations of these things. And what I really like about this ending, and knowing now what you had talked about me before, I will actually kind of cut this discussion off, because I think this ending ties in very well to the ending of Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Oh, okay.
And they're almost...
I would imagine, because they're both writing stories, essentially.
And they're almost two sides of the same coin.
Okay.
One being very hopeful, and one is almost sort of... It's not... I don't want to say anti-hopeful or depressing, but they're both endings of their time in the periods that we were living in at that time. So this ending is very reminiscent of a 2002 post 9/11 world looking for hope.
Had to have impacted it. Like, you have the hopeful one because we needed it.
And I don't want to give too much of Rising Revengeance's ending away, but that is much more an ending with commentary on the connectedness and almost the inability to move on from understood zeitgeist. So let me say it that way without giving too much away to you and hopefully our audience too. It's crazy, and I think that's why I like both the Raiden stories the best, because of their endings.
Okay.
They're also very succinct compared to a Snake ending. Whereas in, like, especially 4, 4's ending seems to go on forever.
It's got the Return of the King syndrome.
Yes. Where there's, like, five endings.
I beat it, like, I think I've told the story before, but, like, I beat 4 right before I had, like, 30 minutes to get to work. And I was like, surely, like, I could, and I had to pause it after, like, I was already late, 10, 15 minutes, and it was still going. It's like, I just got to go to work, I guess. And I come home, and there's still another hour of cinema left. I was like, God damn it, Kojima.
Yep. You gotta settle in and be ready for that one.
It's a long one.
That emphasis on the self, memory, about leaving a legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's very concerned with that in Metal Gear Solid 2. I also wonder if that is more of a subconscious commentary from Kojima. Because, again, originally he'd planned this to be his last Metal Gear.
Mm-hmm.
So he was planning on leaving a legacy with the Metal Gear franchise, and, you know, he wants to be remembered. Obviously, that didn't happen.
You know, that's kind of brilliant, thinking if this was Kojima's last game, right? If this was his last Metal Gear game, and he puts this whole meta commentary in there about trying to be Snake and trying to replicate, like, that hero that came before you. It's like a commentary on the people who are going to take over the Metal Gear project after he had left, too. And just be like, come at me. Like, you can try, but you're not going to do good.
Dude, if there's one thing, like, Kojima is fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
He's hands down my favorite developer. Yoko Taro is a very close second.
What about Suda?
Suda's more your guy. I appreciate Suda. What Suda did. Spoilers for Lollipop Chainsaw when we get to it. I like Suda for what he does. I think he's a bit sloppier, especially compared to Hideo Kojima.
He's the Kevin Smith to Tarantino.
Very, very fucking apt description.
Yeah.
Hideo Kojima is got his fingers in every aspect and fucking fine tunes and refines until it meets what he wants it to do.
I actually would not compare Kojima to... Actually, no, Tarantino's adept. I'll leave that. Oh, that's fit.
Yeah.
That's apt.
Because of his... Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Another, you know, this game also brings back the post-credits, just vocal tracks. It turns out that the Patriots have not only been funding Otacon and Snake in their endeavors to stop Metal Gear Rex, which confuses Snake. The actual 12 names that they've got have been dead for over 100 years, which starts to play into Metal Gear Solid 4, which, again, we will get into more when we get to 4. So I guess the final question is, should we jump to 4 and come back to 3, or should we play them chronologically? What do you think?
The only reason I could even see going to 3 is because of the Big Mother stuff that ties in, but otherwise, and I don't know, the whole, it's the big boss. This is where Metal Gear loses. Like, I am fully on board the narrative in 2. I think it's a little bit messier and unwieldy in its plot than the first one.
There's a lot going on, for sure.
But I still think it's very coherent and well put together. I think from 3 on, it gets bad. It gets messy in, like, in a way that it's hard to understand. As soon as you start bringing in Big Boss and the different... I can't keep it together. It's just, it's very hard for me. So, like... Thinking back to, like, what even happened in 3 or 4, I can't tell you. I can tell you moments, but I couldn't tell you, like, the overarching story.
Okay. Well, we won't decide that here.
We could do 3 or 4, either one, but I think maybe 3 might be good because there's some big boss stuff that I probably need to refresh on.
Okay, cool. I'm down with that.
That's where I was going in that big, long ramble.
Of the two, I will say I'm least looking forward to replaying through 4.
Only because of the cinemas.
It's so long.
That's it. I think the gameplay is better, and I think it's more interesting.
It's the reason I bought a PS3.
Oh, yeah, me too.
It's Metal Gear Solid 2 is the reason I bought a PS2.
Me too. I was on Xbox 360, and I was more than happy to stay there, and then Metal Gear Solid 4 just kept calling my name. Yep. I was like, okay.
I bought it before it came out, because I was like, I know I'm going to get this game, and I'm going to want this shit, so... Yeah. All right, Ryan, where would you place in importance Metal Gear Solid 2, and would you recommend it to our listeners if they somehow have not played this game?
2, and yes, I would recommend... So number 2 would be my second on my list. I think it's Metal Gear Solid 1, okay. Metal Gear Solid 2.
Okay.
We can go over the other ones as we touch upon them in our replays, because it might change. But I think it's a perfect follow-up. I think you absolutely need to play the first one.
Yep.
And if you played the first one, then yeah, I'd still recommend it. Like, it still looks good. It's still very interesting from a story play or story and from a story point. And you compare this game and its story it's telling to, like, some modern games, and it's just as good, if not better. So, yeah, I still think it holds up. It's a little clunky in the controls sometimes, but that's just, like, the generation. Like, that's the PlayStation 2 era was clunky. So, yeah, I recommend it if you played the first one.
Okay.
What about you, Kyle?
I would recommend it. I think it is the best Metal Gear Solid game out of the entire organization, I guess.
Even the first one?
I do. Replaying it this time, I think it's better than the first one. I don't know if I would place it higher on my list because I think culturally and impact...
More important.
It's so fucking... high up there, and it is a fantastic game. I just love, and again, I love the way to circumvents all of your familiarity. It takes everything you know, and it's like, oh yeah, you think you know? Fuck you! Check this out. We're gonna throw a 180.
Look at my shit.
We're gonna throw a 720. I own this shit. This is my shit. Look at this shit.
Look at this shit.
Yeah.
Look at my shit.
Exactly. It's such a fucking wild, insane. Mm-hmm. Pivot from Metal Gear Solid, and to put so much effort and stock into a complete main character switch.
Such a ballsy move.
Holy fuck, man.
It's still probably one of the ballsiest moves in video game history.
Ever.
Aside from maybe Samus being a woman at the end.
Maybe even in entertainment history, like movies, everything. Like, the fact that you go into this game thinking you're fucking Snake, this huge, well-loved character, and they're just like, nah, fuck you, man. Check this out. You're a blonde pretty boy now. And the fact that, like, even without the HD remake, goddamn, this game looks good.
Yeah.
It holds up.
You can say whatever you want about processing power or, like, the power of your machine or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter how many polygons you can push. As long as you have a good art style, your game's going to look good forever. And
Kojima
knows still does
how to fucking get the best out of stuff.
Yeah.
He's one of the rare ones.
The first one's one of the best looking PlayStation 1 games.
As a big fan of, you know, Ico, Shadow of the Colossus, Last Guardian, those people work for Sony and they can't even make stuff that doesn't fucking slow down and drag around. You know, Kojima gets this shit. He knows video games. Mm-hmm. He fucking loves it. And I love it, man. He's my favorite, hands down. I cannot wait for Death Stranding to know what the fuck this guy's going to do.
Oh, yeah.
Giving complete, unrequited, blank check, carte blanche, make it fucking weird, Kojima, go nuts. Sony's like, we're signing it.
Yeah.
Love it. Cannot wait, dude.
Put him and Suda 51 in a game together. Woo, let's
buddy.
See that.
Can
and
you imagine?
Platinum. Platinum.
Yeah.
Combat.
Oh, my God.
There you go.
That's like Dream
Kojima
Game.
Kojima and Platinum.
Kojima, Suda, Platinum. Let's fucking make it go.
I like that.
I just love
the,
it.
The
love
Japanese
it.
Powerhouse that is. Them.
So, if nothing else, you know, I wish I had a cigarette. I could have smoked a cigarette in honor of Snake on this episode. Big Boss
just
goes more cigars.
Loading
yeah,
bar.
Yeah. It slowly drained my health, which is great. Yeah, but at the end of the day, I love Metal Gear Solid as a franchise. It's one of my all-time greats. I'm not in the minority there.
No,
but I look forward. What's great is this show. You know, working back through these things and looking at them as with a more critical eye. I was surprised how Metal Gear Solid 2 held up.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm looking forward to really dissecting 3 and 4, and eventually Ground Zeroes and 5. But I look forward to all of it with you, buddy. Can't wait, man. So
sounds good. I am in.
At the end of the day, you know, I wish you all the absolute worst. But if your life sucks, you should do butt stuff to each other. It'll turn your life around.
That's a bold claim. It's a very bold claim.
Butt stuff makes your nut stuff. Just pulled that one
butt
out.
Butt stuff
not
makes your nuts buff.
There we go. They're not always winners, but that's why we're a team. Thank you, guys. I'm Kyle.
But don't be too rough.
And this is Ryan.
Sure enough.
We are Experience Grand. We'll catch you next time. Bye, guys.
This ain't fluff. Hi, this is Ryan, and if you liked what you just saw or listened to, please check us out at experiencegrind.com. Find us on facebook.com/experiencegrind, at Twitter, over at twitter.com/expgrindpodcast, where Kyle's tweeting out a lot of stuff all the time. And then you can always find us, our podcast, on iTunes, Stitcher, Twitch, or even on YouTube. Find us, just search Experience Grind Podcast. We don't have a channel yet. Stuff super easy to find. But please subscribe. We'll get there to you, make it even easier. And as always, if you like what you saw, we cover mini games and episodes every week. There's sure to be something you love. And as always, grind out.